From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Andrew, the Triforce Howard. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know, but riddle me this, friends and neighbors. Who's not here? If you guessed Pope Francis, you are correct.
Ouch.
Yeah. R.I.P. the Pope.
Yes, Pope Francis passed away on April 21st, 2025. The official cause per the Vatican is a stroke and cardiac arrest after, you know, known continuing complications with double pneumonia, a respiratory tract infection. These can be very dangerous things, especially for people who are getting up in years. He had a life well lived. He passed at the age of 88. And he had been, you know, like we said, he had been struggling for some time leading up to his passage. And I don't know, guys, we talked about this off air. We mentioned this in a strange news segment a while back, or pretty recently, actually. And I think it's fair to say that although we are not ourselves practicing Catholics, we do acknowledge the global grief felt by billions of people in the wake of the Pope's death.
Well, he was like a meaningful pope, too. I was talking to my friend Harry, a friend of the show who's visiting me, and I was like, this is the good pope, right? This is the one that I think even average folks seemed to know about and acknowledge for his somewhat progressive ideas around many things relating to Catholicism. Did very important work in rectifying or at the very least addressing some of the horrible cases of abuse who folks have suffered under the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Social activist as well.
For sure. And now, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, in the Vatican, within the Sistine Chapel, all the cardinals that are eligible have gathered up today. They begin the quest to make a new pope.
The sequestered quest.
The conclave begins on May 7th. We are recording this on Monday, April 28th. We had a conversation off air, folks, about timing of this, whether we should wait for the new pope to be officially chosen until we get the signals of smoke from the Vatican, which is the traditional way of announcing the election of a new pope.
Get that new pope smell.
Sure. And what we wanted to do instead was to respond to a lot of correspondence we've received with questions, commentary, and interpretations about what this passage means for the world ahead. And one of the strangest related concepts that comes back into the news anytime a new pope must be elected is something called the Prophecy of Saint Malachi, also known as the Prophecy of the Popes.
And we're going to get into what exactly that means and consists of right after a quick word from a sponsor.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Your business deploys AI pilots everywhere, but are they going anywhere? Or are they stuck in silos, exhausting resources, unable to scale? Maybe you don't need hundreds of AI pilots. You need a holistic strategy. IBM has 65,000 consultants with Gen AI expertise who can help you design, integrate, and optimize AI solutions. So you're not just deploying AI, you're scaling it across your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM, let's create.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish or satin, or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews all in the app. Download today.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Want to streamline your clinical documentation and take advantage of customizations that put you in control? How about surface information right at the point of care, or automate tasks with just a click? Now you can. Microsoft Dragon Copilot, your AI assistant for clinical workflow, is transforming how clinicians work by offering an extensible AI workspace and a single integrated platform to help you unlock new levels of efficiency. Visit aka.ms/iHeart and learn how Dragon Copilot can ease your administrative burdens and stay focused on what matters most.
Here are the facts. All right. There are a lot of saints in Catholicism. There are a lot of formally recognized saints, right, canonized. And then there are a lot of what we call folk saints, which is a result of centuries of religious syncretism, right? And this guy, Saint Malachi, is an official Catholic saint. I've got it here in the notes. His real baptismal name is kind of hard to pronounce. We know that he was born in 1094 in Northern Ireland, but a lot of his early life is lost to history. He's perhaps in Catholicism best known as the first native-born Irish saint. Does anyone want to tackle his baptismal name, or do we just want to spell it?
Spell.
Yes. Okay. I'm with you there, Matt. He is baptized as MAOLMHAODHOG Morgair, MORGAIR. So Malachi O'More.
That is a dude.
Wait, what?
Right there.
Malachi O'More is how you say it?
That. Really?
No, that's how we're going to say it.
Okay, cool.
That's how we're going to say it. I don't, we don't want to be disrespectful.
Is this Gaelic, the word?
How would you pronounce it? How would you pronounce it?
Malmadog?
That's pretty good.
That would, I don't know. Is this Gaelic, though? Has to be. That's a lot of consonants.
And hence, we're going to call him Malachi.
Okay,
right?
Fair enough.
We know he didn't have, as so many children then and now have experienced, he didn't have the best of childhoods. His father passed away. His father was a teacher, and his father passed away when Malachi was only 7 years old. And then later, when his mother passes away, he gets into a mentorship follower position with a holy recluse living near a cathedral, living in a cell, like an anchorite, like a hermit.
Whoa, okay.
So he became a priest in 1119 and rose up through the ranks to become a bishop in 1132, and then he passed away in 1148. Throughout his life, he was known for this idea of restoring discipline, with some liberal around that, whatever that means. It's a little vague. To the area that was under his care. People felt at the time the church had grown a bit lax, had sort of lost its way a bit, perhaps was not adjusting or reacting to some of the chaos of the time. And he was sort of looked at as bringing the church up to date, to reinstill kind of that sense of spiritual discipline into a world gone awry.
Mm-hmm. And his later biographer, Bernard of Clairvaux, would write an entire book about this man, because that's what biographers do. He calls this work The Life of Saint Malachi, or just Life of St. Malachi. And in this, he describes pretty much what you're talking about, Noel. He says Malachi was known for his obedience to God, his discipline to the church and doctrine, as well as his humility and meekness. So in modern parlance, he made church cool again. He made the sacrament cool again. He was renewing belief at a time when many people in the area were questioning the importance and the authority of the church, not just as a secular institution, but as a spiritual belief system. And we have to remember, you know, there are a lot of other religions still around at the time in that area.
Oh, yeah. And everybody's vying to get new followers to, you know, to all of the different religions. It's very important. You you need more human beings to go out and do the work for mm-hmm. the church slash the gathering slash whatever it is.
Got to grow that flock, baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we have to remember, it's still the case now in modern evenings. But back then, spiritual power and approval of a spiritual system was pretty much the same thing as acquiring political power.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think the Catholic Church is as influential today as it was in the past? Or has it eroded a bit in terms of its political capital?
That's interesting. That reminds me very much of the recent funeral, which is part of why we held off on recording this episode.
Oh, the blue suit?
Oh, the current U.S. president wore a suit that was apparently too light in color for some dress codes. But I'm thinking more about just the entirety of the world leaders, many people who would ordinarily not be in the same room together. I bet you saw it too, Matt, the anti-drone technology in play. Did you see those? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's such a security risk to have all those people.
Oh, yeah. In my mind, guys, I'm trying to formulate this thought. I don't think the Catholic Church has as much power as it maybe once did in the minds of individuals. To me, and this may be fully wrong, but to me, the spiritual nature of someone was a big part of their identity. I'm not saying that it's not that way anymore, but maybe it was stronger, a stronger piece of individual identity for a while. Sure. And now the power that the Catholic Church wields, the Roman Empire as a religion, it is monetary to me, just because of the amount of money that has been flowing through and growing right over all of these centuries.
Shout out to the Black Pope, right?
And all the anti-popes that I didn't even know about.
And shout out to, of course, our friends at the Vatican Bank, Opus Dei, and Knights of Malta, the Jesuits. Look, I think to that question, it's what's really interesting about it is that you could argue, yes, there is growing secularism, especially in Europe and the Mediterranean overall, just across time. However, the reach of the Catholic Church, it's global. You know, we're talking Latin America, we're talking the Philippines, when like the biggest Asiatic country or Asian country that practices Catholicism. So maybe the influence has evolved or shifted, but it's still a huge deal, whether we're talking spiritually or for the atheist in the crowd, simply geopolitically and financially. The Pope is one of the most important figures in the world.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, before we get into the next section here, which is really what this episode's all about, can we just briefly talk about the process? Just explain the process of selecting a Pope? Because I think, to me, that's what's so astonishing about the potential feat of predicting how this whole process would actually work out, and then doing that over and over and over and over again in a single book, like we're going to talk about in the next section. So if we don't mind, just I'd like to talk about what the actual conclave is and how it functions, because it is pretty mind-blowing.
Well, and speaking of the predictability of it, I would be interested in keeping an eye on betting markets around who the next Pope is going to be, because you know they're out there. But I also will mention again, I think we said it in our previous conversation, maybe it was on Strange News, about the film Conclave and how the downloads of it are through the roof, because a lot of people want to know about this process, and the timing couldn't be better for the creators of that excellent film. And it does show in great detail how the process works. So let's go through that now.
I actually started reading that novel too, that the film's based on. And I was really impressed with the author, Robert Harris, so far. I haven't finished it, but he put boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Like he went to the Vatican, they walked him through the process. So it is, there's a lot of, Conclave is of course a film, right? Not a documentary, but it does have a lot of factual insights into the real life process of the cardinals and the conclave.
And the perspective is neat, because you kind of feel like a fly on the wall. You're trapped in there with them. So there is that. It's certainly an experiential film. I highly recommend it.
So let's spend a few minutes on the process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's let's say a pope passes away, as just happened, and we need to choose a new pope. You have to gather together all of the cardinals that exist, the Catholic cardinals that are officially a part of the church. There are 71 countries on the planet that have cardinals residing within them. You have to get all of those cardinals. By the way, there are 135 eligible cardinals right now on the planet.
Ooh, out of 252 total.
Yes. And the reason why there are only 135 eligible cardinals is because you have to be under the age of 80 to go and be a part of this conclave process.
So let's pause there. Just think about the math. Of the 252, 135 are young enough to vote.
Yes, which just tells you about, maybe cardinals are just old.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it is a position of high authority.
It is.
You know what I mean? It's not a, right now, I mean, historically, this wasn't always the case, but right now you do have to kind of earn that position.
Yeah.
You can't just be like a cardinal nepo baby. Also the issue is maybe just to be fair, travel concerns.
Oh yeah,
for people who are quite elderly,
for sure. And you know, who knows what you're going to do with your vote if you're almost out of here already. I think the idea is you make a decision that a slightly younger person, even if you're still 79, you make a decision based on what's going to be best for the church and or for humanity or whatever that decision is based on.
But there are still constituencies, right? Like there are people that these individual popes from their parts of the world represent, and perhaps there might be differences politically.
But that's not a democracy, though.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, for sure.
The thought is everybody is going to do what, you know, follow.
God tells them.
Yeah, what the vision is, what the... Yeah,
I guess it's just to say that this process, though incredibly, you know, rooted in sacred tradition, is not immune from the trappings of politics.
100%.
That's all I'm saying.
We'll talk about that in depth, I think. But to your point, Matt, part of the calculation, not just safety of travel. Sure, that is at best a tertiary concern, if we're being honest. It's holding to tradition, like you were saying, no voting in absentia. And then I would argue also, what I think we're getting at here, Matt, is the idea that to vote your conscience and God's will, you need to be young enough to realize that it will still affect you. You can't just vote and be out. There will be consequences and ramifications within your lifetime for your part of the church and the church overall.
And yet it is a secret ballot, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Everybody who can vote hangs out, gets locked inside the Sistine Chapel.
Like a sequestered jury.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They write down in secret the name of their chosen candidate, and then by rank, because the cardinals are ranked,
right?
You go up and you put your vote, your little piece of paper, into a sacramental urn. It's like a ceremonial urn. Then there are three cardinals who are the scrutineers. That's their name.
It's great. Right. It's a great term.
They tally all the ballots. Once they've counted them, they burn all of them ballots.
Right.
And so nobody knows but the three scrutineers.
Right.
And then if there is a 2/3 majority candidate chosen out of that vote, then they light the white smoke in the Sistine Chapel and everybody knows there's a new pope. If not, they hold the vote again and again and again
and again and again. And it can go on for a while, right?
So it goes on. There are two votes in the morning and two votes in the afternoon, right? Black smoke every time if no pope is chosen. Then they'll do that for 3 days straight. Then if no pope has been chosen, they take a day off. And then they go back and they do it again.
And that day off is really for networking, politicking, in one's case. That's what it's for. And also, you know, this is going to be familiar to so many people, Catholic and non-Catholic alike. There is a lot of old tradition here, and some of it can frankly seem a little bit extra in the parlance of our time, or perhaps a little bit maybe silly or officious. But I would argue, as a non-Catholic, that it is incredibly important to remember there's a reason they're still doing stuff this way. like the reason you seal off the Pope's apartment, we're getting so far away from the point of this show, but the reason you seal off the Pope's apartment after his death, we didn't even talk about all the death rituals, is because people used to like rob the guy's apartment, rob the papal apartment, for reliquaries and objects of power. They used to rob the graves. You know what I mean? That's why there's a triple lined coffin.
Yes. Well, I just to the point of being about the show, I think all this stuff is important because this is all this. Imagine that process that we just described. And then the stakes that Ben just described there, like once a Pope is out of the office, imagine somebody having some kind of vision at some point and writing down this vision where he saw every single Pope that's going to come into power for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, if it was him. And this is our
if it was real, if any of us.
Right. This is our segue back to Malachi. So we know just a very little bit about him now. Today, for I would say lay Catholic and non-Catholics alike, Malachi is not known for his living work in the church. He's instead known for a cryptic piece of writing we alluded to at the top, generally called the Prophecy of the Popes. Technically, it's called Prophecy of St. Archbishop Malachi Concerning the Supreme Pontiffs, the Bishop of Rome, the Popes. It's weird because it sounds like it's a book, but it's 11 short sort of single line paragraphs and then two additional paragraphs that are multiple lines. And like you were saying, Matt, it claims to be a divinely inspired guide to predict the succession of 112 total popes, starting with Pope Celestine II in 1143, right, during the life of St. Malachi. And then it goes onward, and at the very end, there's a guy named Petrus Romanus, who is supposed to emerge as a final figure after the 112th Pope. So according to tradition, like we're saying, Malachi is summoned to Rome by the Pope at the time. He sees the famous seven hills. And when he sees them for the first time in his life, he falls to his knees. He has this vision. It details every single Pope who will reign in the Catholic Church, with that ending point, a guy named Petrus Romanus. And I suggest we share an English translation of what they say about Petrus, because it's pretty heavy.
So here's a quote. In the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will reign Peter the Roman, who will feed his flock amid many tribulations, after which the city of seven hills will be destroyed, and the dreadful judge will judge the people. That's a bit much.
End of days. Stuff, you know.
Boy, oh boy.
The return of the Antichrist.
So have we ticked off any of these boxes, guys? Are we going to go through it as to how it's perceived? Okay.
Now, hold on. Is the dreadful judge,
is that
the
God?
Antichrist, or is it God?
Yeah.
Right.
It's God, I think.
How does one interpret, you know?
Because
he doesn't specify.
But if it's going by the Bible, right?
Then it's God.
Then it is like the dude is coming. Ooh. Because only
the dude abides.
In Revelation, the only being in existence that knows when the end of times occurs, the judgment day occurs, is God himself. Not even Jesus is aware.
No, Jesus can only intercede.
Yes.
On behalf of humanity and the world. I mean, these are bold claims, and we're talking about interpretation already. Those who believe the prophecy is correct have serious and worrisome questions about what happens now. The final pope is going to be the 112th, after whom we got this Peter the Roman guy who leads the church through the tribulation period, but things go terribly wrong. This is the time of judgment, and it may occur within your lifetime if you believe that the 112th pope was the recently passed Pope Francis. So common interpretations will tell us that Pope Francis is the 112th on Malachi's list, or Arnold's, spoiler, we'll get to it.
So he would be pre-Peter the Roman then, right?
Yeah, the penultimate.
Okay.
So,
but some people say he was Peter the Roman.
And some people say he was Peter the Roman. Again, tea leaves interpretation. How does this help you address the world? What happens next? Is the world prepared? What do we know about this purported prophecy and its claims? And what do we make of the interpretations? Let's pause for a word from our sponsors and then dive in.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabay. Anabay is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for up to 60% off site-wide. Backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Your business deploys AI pilots everywhere, but are they going anywhere? Or are they stuck in silos, exhausting resources, unable to scale? Maybe you don't need hundreds of AI pilots. You need a holistic strategy. IBM has 65,000 consultants with Gen AI expertise who can help you design, integrate, and optimize AI solutions. So you're not just deploying AI, you're scaling it across your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM, let's create.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish or satin, or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews all in the app. Download today.
Trading shouldn't have barriers. When Robinhood started, it was built to make trading more accessible. Now, Robinhood offers more sophisticated trading tools. Experience the future of trading on Robinhood Legend, the all-new desktop platform that harnesses intuitive design to deliver a seamless experience for traders. Free to use with a Robinhood account. Robinhood Legend is designed for how you trade, with powerful charts, including custom intervals down to the tick, and over 80 indicators and drawing tools. Trade all of your favorite assets, including popular stocks and ETFs, all in one place. Take your trading to the next level by customizing your layout in seconds and even enter and exit positions in one tap, right from the chart, with up to 8 charts per layout. The future of trading is fast, powerful, and precise. Experience it now on Robinhood Legend. Sign up today. Investing is risky. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, is a registered broker-dealer. Other fees may apply.
Here's where it gets crazy. All right, before we answer any of those questions, not to tease everyone too much, we have to acknowledge there's a bag of badgers here because the prophecy is attributed to Saint Malachi, said to be written in 1139, but it's first published much later. Okay, it's lost at some point, and then it's rediscovered, and at some point after its rediscovery, it is published in 1595 by a Benedictine monk named Arnold Wild.
So almost 400 and what, 50 years later? I mean, that's, yeah.
The papal predictions up to 1590 are super precise.
What?
Up to when he publishes it, they're super on point, like bullseye every time. It gets a little less precise. You could argue increasingly less precise after 1590. This would lead believers to say, well, maybe it's an imperfect interpretation of a perfect prophecy. And skeptics would say imperfect is just a fancier way of saying guessing.
Yeah. Guys, I want to just do a quick thought experiment. Imagine you are Saint Malachi right now. You look out at those seven hills. You have this vision. Do you have just some paper to start writing down in great detail exactly what you saw?
Perhaps like, some gold tablets?
But like 112 iterations of what you're seeing in the moment?
Do a sketch maybe?
Like, it's a good question, but also one could argue that being a divine revelation like this is encoded differently, right? What if it's burned into your brain?
Oh, that's like a cognitive tattoo. How could we possibly comprehend what that must be like?
Right.
It would be a whole different set of equipment that's being used, right?
Well, but it's like a movie that's playing and you're able to see enough of it to write down like very specific cryptic things.
It's a moment that exists outside of time, you could say, that you continually return to. It's always okay. That moment. There are, you know, because we're dealing with divinity and spirituality, the primary assumption is that the regular rules to some degree do not apply.
Okay. Right?
So
I'll go
that's
with
how
that.
We would explain it. Yeah. If we're taking the side of the true believers, scholars, true believers among them, went back and examined the prophecies at length, way before this hit the most recent news cycle. And they said, okay, hold on. So we know this doesn't begin with the very first popes. It starts in 1139, and it's right about that prediction. And it's right about every other prediction up to 1590, depending on how you interpret it. It's more specific than everything post 1590.
And yet after 1590, as prophecies often lead to, there becomes more vagary, which opens it up to even further interpretation and reinterpretation and potentially politicization, you know, the idea of turning this prophecy towards a particular end, depending on who's doing the interpreting.
Right. Imagine going from naming someone very specifically, like this is Josiah Williams Wilkerson, and this will be the Pope this time. And then as you get further into the future, it's like there's a guy associated with olives. You got to believe me.
Yeah. No, yeah. It sounds like horoscopes.
I'm referencing a specific example.
Yes, you are. A very recent one, at least in for our history. But it feels as though it becomes horoscopes for a potential human being, right? And like you could pull anything from that concept of olives, apply it to the person who was elected, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be anything in their life.
Olives. I think that's important to note. I also like the analogy of a Rorschach, right? It's a psychological Rorschach painting, right? What do you see? What does this word mean in this context? And that's the interpreters and champions of this work. They say they will argue the prophecy does contain specific predictions that cannot be denied, including the more recent predictions or what we think of. So maybe it's helpful to check out a few examples here. Let's go to the olive thing. Pope Benedict, the 111th Pope, the 111th Pope. Malachi predicts 111 will be called Gloria Olivae, meaning glory to the olive. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not the same thing as Benedict, but wait.
The saints of Benedict, they are directly associated with olives, in fact.
Yeah, known as the Olivetans. The Order of Saint Benedict, they have another name. And so for some researchers, you say Pope Benedict came from this order, is associated with it, therefore he's associated with olives. Therefore, this is bringing glory to the olive. Therefore, this prophecy is correct. You can see a second example. Well, let's do like two more. One that I think really stood out a lot to all of us is the idea of de labore solis, from the labor of the sun.
So it's possible that this may be a reference to Pope John Paul II, who was born during a solar eclipse. Again, was this a coincidence or divine providence? It depends on who you ask, right? One person's coincidence, to your point, Ben, here in the outline, is another person's just absolute unimpeachable evidence. So we've got another example in Peregrinus Apostolicus, and that is often linked with Pope Paul VI, who was quite the world traveler, who traveled extensively throughout his career.
Yeah.
Can we do a couple more? Because
sure, as many as you like.
I want to show the difference between the, what was the year, 1595? So pre-1595, you've got Pope John the 22nd. And the motto, the translation of the motto to English is "from the bony shoemaker." And he was the son of a dang shoemaker. Okay, that's pretty good. But that's in 1316 to 1334. That's when John the 22nd was there. But then you go to Pope Urban, I think it's Urban the 8th. This is 1623 to 1644. So that's after the period of accuracy, right? It translates to lily and rose. And guess what's on the coat of arms for this person? Lilies and roses.
Right.
Something that's on the coat of arms versus the son of a shoemaker. I don't know how you judge either of those two things as being like super accurate or not meaningful, right? It's tough for me.
Again, there's no one, especially 1590, even pre-1590, there's no one saying, this guy's name is specifically this. He's this tall. His interests include, yeah, he's got a weird mole.
Yeah.
And you can find, you know, it's on his armpit. Just ask him. That's the Pope. That's a weird conversation to have with His Holiness. But still, you know, with these examples, we can see how, especially in the increasingly vague descriptions of more recent popes, interpreters can get accused of grasping at cognitive straws. But there's a point we have to hit. It's super important. In all fairness, they don't have much to go on from the original prophecy. Not a ton of bio details, right? Specific towns and so on. You might have to use as little as a single three-word phrase to find a solid connection. But on the other side of this, there are a lot of things to connect to, because popes are some of the most famous, well-documented people in their society, right? Regardless of the time in which you're living, we know a lot about their lives, especially the more modern ones. So if you are looking for a positive interpretation to justify the prophecy to yourself as accurate, you have a lot more to pull from, because these guys are obsessively researched and surveilled. You know what I mean? You could argue that it is going to be devilishly easy to call the next pope Peter the Roman, just because we will know everything about the next pope, and we can be like, ah, Peter, it's an acronym, or, you know, ah, this guy went to Rome one time.
These prophecies are always so fun, especially when they don't come true, and then you have to see people kind of scrambling to explain why. You know?
Yeah.
Like, no, it was because this didn't quite happen, or we misinterpreted this one thing. Just wait for it. Wait for it. It's totally going to happen. Yeah. It's coming.
Dude, guys, I think this is a good point to bring this up to. It's something that I did not know at all. Anti-popes.
Yes.
This is first for me. I'm going to be completely surprised, guys. I don't know about the anti-pope, but I can maybe conjecture. But
please. Well, Noel, here you go. If you hear the word anti-pope, what conjures in your mind?
Antichrist.
Okay, I hear that too, especially associated with the Catholic Church, right? Anti in front of something, it's not good. But what if it's an anti-pope?
I don't want to spoil it. It's purposely
a nemesis of some kind?
It's the church's term.
Yes.
That's why it's purposely meant to cast dispersion and sound double plus ungood, right? I can't remember which church that's from, but I think that goes through here. The anti-pope, so people have often vied for this position, especially before the rise of secular thought as a widely accepted thing. Everybody wanted to be the Pope. Now,
yes,
like your king for God. You know what I mean? The other monarchs are only worldly monarchs, so they got to jump when you say jump. So why wouldn't you want to be the Pope? That means, this tells us a little bit about why the conclave has these very strict traditionalist rules. There were a lot of people who said, yeah, I'm the Pope.
Yeah, but people who actually gained some power and some following, who would then do things that the Pope does, but in a different part of the world usually. So imagine there's a Pope in, you know, the Holy Roman Catholic Church there in Rome, but then there's another Pope in Germany who says, oh, well, I'm actually the Pope,
right?
And is practicing as the Pope. And this is, guys, I'm reading that graphic novel, The Secret History, and that's the one that goes through basically history with a whole other version of what history is, right? But in there, there's a whole section about popes and anti-popes, and it was all political as a way to, at least with it's depicted in the stories there, as a way to put the Roman Empire, or the what's remaining of the Roman Empire represented by the Catholic Church, versus, like, in this case, like Germany.
Right.
The Germanic forces. It's interesting that that's a real thing that was happening throughout history. There's a huge list of them that the Catholic Church agrees. Like, yeah, these are all anti-popes.
A lot of people want the position, and there can only be one. The Pope is Highlander rules. for sure. And this is I'm glad we're bringing this up, because this is an issue that can cause schism in the church. Because if you have, say, two different people calling themselves the Pope at the same time, and they both get a sizable number of followers and a sizable amount of geopolitical support, then this could destroy the church. You know, it can set things into chaos.
Well, and it's also a discrepancy within this prophecy, because there are anti-popes included within the list here that's allegedly given to us by St. Malachi. And that's where the interpretation gets off even further, because some of the anti-popes, I guess it's unsure within people who are translating it now and trying to interpret it now, whether or not a certain person included in that list is an anti-pope or an actual pope. And then if it is an anti-pope, does that throw off the number of popes of like where we actually are in the list?
More importantly, it also gives us more room for interpretation and favorable interpretation. So if this one guy doesn't work out, what about this other guy? Maybe it's really an anti-pope. So this is one of the things that we return to often on this show in our strange mission here. Whether you're talking Nostradamus or Edgar Cayce, doomsday prophecies of which abound throughout history, the one thing we return to is prophecy is tricky. We're not being jerks when we say it. We get it. Who does not want to predict the future? It's an awesome superpower. DARPA is working on it around the clock. But the issue is, you could argue, psychological. Civilization as groups and individuals tend to prize prediction retroactively. You like to remember the stuff that one way or another did come true. And your brain is heavily incentivized to kind of ignore the other incorrect attempts at prediction. So like if you wake up one day and you say, it's going to be a bad day, the first car I see outside of my house is going to be a Honda Odyssey, you're not going to remember all the times it wasn't. You're going to remember the one time you opened the door, you saw a Honda Odyssey, and you went, shh.
It's like, man, for you, I just imagine you walking through the neighborhood and there's like a Honda Odyssey that just peeks out from behind a bush and then sort of ducks back in, you know? It just follows you, man. I get it. The fear is real.
Psychology. Yeah. And thank you for your support, man.
Of course,
that
man.
One.
I'm here for you.
But that, like, does it make sense? It's a bad analogy on my part, but it seems like we don't care for it when a prophecy is only partially true. It's an all or nothing endeavor. So if everybody agrees, hey, this one papal prediction is a stretch, it's incorrect, then it couldn't mean Malachi had a typo on that one line and got 99% of everything else dead on. It calls everything into question. So it is crucial. We are heavily incentivized to believe the entire thing, each and every prediction is somehow on the money. And we just have to interpret what Malachi is writing correctly. Oh, and the church has not officially co-signed this prophecy. They have not formally endorsed it. They haven't called it heretical. You're not going to get in trouble for mentioning it if you're a cardinal, but they haven't formally championed it. And
heretical meaning a form of heresy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like against the church, you
won't get in trouble for bringing it up in meetings.
Okay.
But I don't know. It also, another, just a forensic aspect of it, if this is the biggest thing that happened to Malachi in his life, why don't his contemporaries know much about it? Why don't they mention it? The people who are around at the same time, right? Was it kept top secret until after his death? Did God provide this deep insight, this cheat code, this game genie to the future of the church, and then say at the very end, oh, by the way, don't tell anyone? And he's like, what, really, God? And he's like, yeah, not to like 1590.
And make sure somebody else writes it in their book, not you. Somebody else is going to like take this stuff and then just put it in their book.
well, God, can I at least give like specific names and dates? No, get weird with it.
What was the name of the book that this showed up in?
We're talking off air for a second. It's important to note this wasn't published on its own. It is published as part of Arnold Wion's work Lignum Vitae.
Yes.
So it's a smaller part of a larger work.
It's so weird. We'll just throw it in there, guys.
Can it be a whole book, God? Absolutely. No.
Just a pamphlet? Just a pamphlet.
No, we're putting it in this other book. I'm sorry I shouted because I'm supposed to whisper. I'm a small, still voice. So anyway, not to have too much fun with God, but hopefully God enjoys these joke every now and then. Look, especially because we're talking about some serious high stakes here, maybe we pause for a word from our sponsors, then we talk through some of the theories and speculation surrounding this, not all of which relies on the concept of divinity.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. That's why you need a washable sofa that can keep up. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. Starting at just $699, it's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Your business deploys AI pilots everywhere. But are they going anywhere? Or are they stuck in silos, exhausting resources, unable to scale? Maybe you don't need hundreds of AI pilots. You need a holistic strategy. IBM has 65,000 consultants with Gen AI expertise who can help you design, integrate, and optimize AI solutions. So you're not just deploying AI, you're scaling it across your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM, let's create.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish or satin, or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews all in the app. Download today.
Something unexpected happened after Jeremy Scott confessed to killing Michelle Schofield in Bone Valley Season 1.
I just knew him as a kid.
Long, silent voices from his past came forward.
And he was just staring at me.
And they had secrets of their own to share.
Gilbert King, I'm the son of Jeremy Lynn Scott.
I was no longer just telling the story. I was part of it.
Every time I hear about my dad, it's, oh, he's a killer. He's just straight evil.
I was becoming the bridge between a killer and the son he'd never known.
If the cops and everything would have done their job properly, my dad would have been in jail. I would have never existed.
I never expected to find myself in this place. Now, I need to tell you how I got here.
At the end of the day, I'm literally a son of a killer.
Bone Valley, Season 2. Jeremy.
Jeremy, I want to tell you something.
Listen to new episodes of Bone Valley, Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear the entire new season ad-free with exclusive content, subscribe to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
All right, we're back. This one is for the skeptics in the crowd. All right, we're just going to be fair, talking with everybody. So if you are listening to this episode tonight and you kind of want to throw away the whole prophecy concept, just throw it out as humbug and hogwash. Ask yourself this, what if cardinals electing popes post-1595 were in some way or another influenced simply by knowing about the list?
Oh.
Well, guys, I was going to bring up, I linked it in the chat there. There is a pretty fascinating article on the National Catholic Register, 9 things you need to know about how cardinals actually vote in conclaves. And there's just some very interesting little details, one of which definitely gets into what you're talking about, Ben, but one of which I thought I'd mention. Why is the first ballot significant? And why will it likely never yield an actual result? Also, why, if the cardinals are electing their choice, their number one choice, do their votes change over time, you know, as this cycle, you know, kind of rinses and repeats?
Yeah, because it's about building consensus, right, as much as possible.
But hold on.
Yeah.
the, what are they called? The, I just said the name of them. The guys that come through and they tally, the scrutineers.
The scrutineers,
The scrutineers don't sit there and announce how many votes each person got because they burn all the ballots, right?
Right.
So everybody just kind of throws their name out there in that first ballot, and then they, the scrutineers come back and say, no, we don't have 2/3.
But they do talk to each other.
Yeah,
like, that's exactly right. Can I just say the first point here, why is the first ballot significant? It says it is the first time that the Cardinals get the lay of the land in a concrete way. Up to this point, they have had discussions amongst themselves about who would be a good pope, and they have done some informal nose counting to get a sense of how much support there may be for different candidates. Now, however, they get actual vote counts and can attach numbers to how much support different candidates have. All this is reflected in that film as well.
Yeah, so it'd be like 40-something for Wilkerson. Exactly.
Yep, that's all reflected in the film Conclave.
Okay, I didn't understand they announced the vote.
But they don't announce who each person voted
for. But the stats are very important because at the end of the day, you want a winner.
Pick a winner. As soon as possible, right? Lest chaos reign. But also, they can't say who voted for whom, because then, you know, imagine how much of a jerk you sound like if they say Wilkerson votes for Wilkerson.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Well, like, that's not a good look.
But if I'm not mistaken, in Conclave as well, sorry to keep harping on that, it really is quite good. There is a way, by process of elimination, where you kind of do start to realize who's voting for who.
100%. Yeah, especially after repeated votes, right? And repeated conversations. Now, going back to what we're saying about the psychology, the point we're saying earlier about skeptics in the crowd, I'm really interested in this idea that Cardinals, especially post-1595, may have been influenced by knowing about the list, by knowing, you know, according to this prophecy, whomever comes out of this conclave as the Pope is somehow referenced by this, you know, this phrase about olives or what have you. So what if you are one of the front runners to become the next pope, right? And everybody in the conclave and in these conversations looks around and says, dang, this guy does have that whole solar eclipse thing going on. I guess I should vote for him. We also don't know whether cardinals say dang. It would be cool. I do like that. But I don't know if, you know, I don't know if you're allowed to.
The vote comes through. 44 votes for Peter Bolin.
Dang. So this is completely possible though, right, guys? And if it is possible, that would mean the prophecy kind of works. It kind of functions, at least in that it becomes self-fulfilling. So in that case, to believe in the prophecy, we don't really need to believe in divine intervention and guidance so much as psychology and like good old PR, good old public relations. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It is all about the politics after the vote ends and everybody goes back. They go back to St. Martha's house. That's where all the cardinals stay in this time. And then they will, you know, make their way back over to the Sistine Chapel, door locks, and they get started again. It just makes you wonder what little combos happen at St. Martha's.
What did they talk about at lunch? You know what I mean? Also, what's on the menu? I'm so curious about that. So speaking of skeptics, let's reframe our perspective just a little bit. If we imagine this prophecy to not just be incorrect, but what if we imagine it as a purposeful falsehood, a known forgery, then our question becomes, why would you bother writing it in the first place? And this is where we go to some pretty interesting theories from folks who are themselves inside the church.
So the leading theory goes all the way back to a character we've already mentioned. A character is a human person. Arnold Wion, perhaps. So let's go to M.J. O'Brien, who wrote an historical and critical account of the so-called prophecy of St. Malachy regarding the succession of popes, as we can imagine, so-called, all the way back in 1880. Yes. Highly descriptive, yet somehow highly vague and a little shady, you know, a little snark-coded. Yes, yeah, indeed. Man.
Let's hear about this so-called prophecy.
Let's do it.
So-called is like never a compliment in English.
Never it is. It's like, who do you think you are, Mr.
We'd like to award the so-called Pulitzer to blah, blah, blah.
You know what I mean? You, so these so-called writer.
I hear a Baptist minister in Atlanta. She's like, this so-called prophecy.
Yeah, pretender is the implication, right? So O'Brien himself, a priest, which is maybe where he's coming from on this, notes that the verses Wion published, as well as the interpretations, correspond quite quite closely to an earlier historical account of the popes written by a friar by the name of Onofrio Panvino in 1557 called Epitome Romanorum Pontificum, or A Brief History of the Roman Pontiffs.
Yeah, we're being diplomatic because these two works correspond so closely that the prophecy Wion discovers and publishes, it contains some of the same exact errors as Onofrio's work, which happened earlier. So does God just want everybody to keep making the same factual errors?
Oh, maybe. It's the same vision. It had the same issues. It was just given out to a couple different people, maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Nostradamus also apparently wrote about this.
All right. I'm sure he did.
Look, well, I don't know exactly because I can't confirm it. I'm reading it in things like Economic Times and the New York Post.
But has anyone hit us with a specific quatrain?
I'm trying to find them, but it looks like it's pulled directly from the prophecy of the Pope's writing. I'll give you a quote that's in a New York Post article. It says, Nostradamus wrote, quote, "Through the death of a very old pontiff, a Roman of good age will be elected. Of him, it will be said that he weakens his see," as in the Holy See, "but long will he sit and in biting activity." And then this is the quote that I think is directly from the other one. But again, they are saying this is Nostradamus writing, but I couldn't find the original Nostradamus text. Mm-hmm. But it says, quote, that Nostradamus said, "In the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will sit Peter the Roman." Sounds exactly like the prophecy already. Mm-hmm. "Who will pasture his sheep in many tribulations." Okay. "And when these things are finished, the city of seven hills will be destroyed and the dreadful judge will judge his people."
Pasture his sheep?
I think that's from the prophecy. Like, I think that's a direct pull quote from the prophecy, not from Nostradamus. And they're misattributed.
Earlier.
There's a lot of repeated little lines. I mean, you know, it certainly has the flavor.
It's 10:10, the exact quote we had.
So it feels to me like it's a misattribution, but if you're online just looking for this stuff, you may run across that and think, oh, wait, Nostradamus said that.
There's some slight variations, right? The pasture, the flock, isn't that a little different, or is it complete one-to-one?
You're right. It's a little bit different. Real quick, folks, we have to say this. Nostradamus was born in 1503, died around 1566, so before the prophecy was published. He also did not write in English.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And neither did Malachi, neither did Wilde. Yeah.
Yeah. This is allegedly, according to the New York Post, from a 1555 publication titled Les Prophéties.
Ah, okay. Yes, that makes sense because Nostradamus was French. So that part checks out.
Boom.
All right. Solved it. So, okay, wait, though. If this is the case, if Malachi doesn't write this, or if Malachi or Wion maybe pulls from Nostradamus and from other extant works at the time, if he was cribbing from existing sources, why would he bother? Was it just like a boring afternoon at the monastery? They didn't have UFC, you know what I mean? They didn't have cable. So, or is there a conspiracy at play? This goes back to the point about self-fulfilling prophecy and PR.
Yes.
Right? This is where we see, you know, politics are politics wherever you go. So how could politics play a role in prophecy? Or how could, let's switch it. How could prophecy play a role in politics?
Oh, I mean, gosh, it's just the religion in and of itself is such a powerful tool of control. Not sure if you guys have seen Heretic, the recent kind of, elevated horror.
Sure.
And it's this idea of how belief and religion in general are ultimately tools of control. And that's where the Catholic Church and their political cachet, I think, really comes into play here. But prophecy and politics have often been hand in hand.
Yeah. It's all belief, man. You think that's air you're breathing, Neo?
I'm telling you.
Did you know Puritans were against forks?
What?
They hated forks.
Because they were too like pitchfork-like?
Felt they were ungodly. We were hanging with AJ Bahamas Jacobs, and he told us about Puritans being against forks.
So well, it removes you from your food.
That's true.
How
do they feel about shovels?
How do they feel about soup? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm. Oh, God.
Anyway, over the centuries, particularly with one guy you'll see quoted often or referred to often, a 17th century priest named Louis Moreri. People have argued the prophecy came about not as divine guidance, but instead as a cynical internal move for power. Louis and others like him believe that the conspiracy takes place during the conclave to replace Pope Urban VII in 1590, and that there was a faction of people who were supporting a guy named Cardinal Girolamo Sommancelli, and they started spreading the word about the prophecy to help make it look like he was chosen by God to be the next pope. But this has issues, just to be fair, because Wyon published this in 1595, so for this conspiracy to be real, it would have to mean that Arnold had already known the prophecy, like it had already been lost and rediscovered, and everyone inside the church was aware of it before it was officially published. That timeline is, as Gollum would say, tricksy.
Oh, yes. So let's just say for the sake of argument that it was known internally, in which case it does make sense that someone might have looked to the prophecy, even if formally unacknowledged, as you put it so succinctly, Ben, in your notes here, and, you know, see whether or not it supported their particular political cause or their agenda or how they feel that their constituents are being served, right? Yeah. So politics at the end of the day are politics, however sacred or profane.
Mm-hmm. He seeks the prophecy in the archives. Go to the archives. Find my precious. Find my secret archives.
Gollum, quick question. I'm a cardinal.
Yes.
Yeah. So big fan of your prophecies and stuff. My question is, how can I make this about me?
Call him.
I'm sorry, I don't have any more.
That's good, Matt.
And scene. Yes. So, all right.
Is a Vatican secret archives that theoretically could contain St. Malachi's original writings of this prophecy that were then found and included in this other book. I'm just saying.
Yeah. But also, in addition to that, the Vatican secret archives, check out our episode and our video on that. Secret doesn't quite mean for the Vatican what secret means for us outsiders.
Well, you got to know what's in there.
You got to know exactly what you're asking for. You can't go in. It's not Target shopping with vibes. You can't go in and say, give me something on, you know, like give me something sick on witches or like church schisms and antipopes. You'll have to go in and say, I need specifically this title and it's by this person.
It is interesting though. What if somebody did know about Malachi and just asked for something, writings of Malachi, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You could theoretically go in there and look for that.
And people have tried, you know what I mean? But also the Vatican doesn't really have what we would call FOIA request.
The LexisNexis thing and all that?
Yeah, Freedom of Information Act is not a thing. So in any case, whatever we feel about this conspiracy theory, the prophecy PR did not work. The cardinal in question, Sommancelli, he loses the election. The second conclave of 1590 sees a guy named Gregory elected to replace Pope Urban VII. And maybe that's where we leave it. Like, we don't know who will become the next pope as we record here on Monday, April 28th, 2025. The conclave is set to begin on May 7th, 2025. So very, very soon.
Theoretically today.
Mm-hmm. Right. If this publishes on time. And still, look, here's the thing. It's no question that we all live in frightening, chaotic times. So, of course, people want safety, security, predictability. Whether or not you personally believe in this prophecy, other prophecies, or the concept of prophecy in general, you can't really blame people for wanting pattern and order to the universe. Because the alternative, like our pal Dan Harmon always says, is the alternative is there's no one at the wheel. And that's more frightening than almost any conspiracy out there.
Not even Jesus?
I mean, yeah. It depends on how you feel. Okay.
Maybe you can't be over 80 as a cardinal to vote because you're just ready for the end times. You're just
maybe you're too quick for the trigger.
Yeah, you're just like, you know what? Just go ahead and bring in the bad guy, whoever it is.
I have my time.
Yeah.
I'm purposely voting for an anti-pope.
I'm done. I'm done.
That's what I was going to say, though. Could there potentially within this system be like a dark horse kind of agent of chaos?
Yes. And there can be situations where people seem, cardinals are at loggerheads for one reason or another, yet the stability and sanctity of the church is ever the priority. So the concept is that eventually people will come together and make the correct choice. They'll do what is godly and moral. But before we call this humbug and hogwash again, guys, out of the 9 front runners set to succeed Pope Francis right now on April 28th, 3 of them are named Peter. Boom! Oh, it's too real. Gosh. It's too real.
But Brink coming out from the other side, guys, I'm hearing whispers right now that a lot of the more conservative church leaders are looking at this guy, Cardinal Robert Sarah of Guinea, that they want, and he would be the first black pope.
Right, right. And there's also a guy, I want to say a Filipino cardinal in the running.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would be amazing if we saw like a full-on change to the face of the Catholic Church. Like, it doesn't matter what prophecies are out there. That would be just cool as heck.
Yeah, but to do that, he'd have to, again, beat Peter Erdo. He'd have to beat, let's see, where are the other Peters? I don't know if Pietro counts.
Well, it does.
Yeah, we'll count Pietro. And so, and then, of course, Peter Codwell Apia Turkson,
see?
Ghanaian. Yeah.
And it all depends on, are the cardinals voting with the prophecy on purpose?
Huh? Or do they reject it, as so many other members of the church have?
Yeah.
They believe it's hogwash themselves. I don't know. This makes you think, folks, we hope we've done... We hope we've been fair. We have had a little bit of good-hearted levity, but it is, you know, it's a time of great tragedy for Catholics across the planet. We want to hear your thoughts, Catholic or non-Catholic alike, both about the prophecy of the popes and about prophecy in general. So find us online, give us a call, drop us a good old-fashioned email.
Well, by all means, please do. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook with our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. Getting in all the Pope talk, the conclave chat there among that group of lovely conspiracy realists. You can also find us at that handle on X, FKA Twitter, and on YouTube with video content galore for your perusing enjoyment. On Instagram and TikTok, however, we're Conspiracy Stuff Show, and there's more.
We have a phone number. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, it is a voicemail system. You've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and say within the message if we can use your name and message on the air. Call us. Tell us who you think is going to be the next pope. Or just call us for any reason whatsoever. If you don't like using your phone, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the entities that read each piece of correspondence we receive. Be well aware, yet unafraid. Sometimes the void writes back. As a matter of fact, I can see it. I can see it.
Oh, God.
The fog rolls in.
No.
The Viking will write to us. What are we talking about? What did we just predict? There's one way to find out.
Maybe he's the new pope.
Oh, yeah.
What did we just predict? There's one way to find out. Join us a step further from the light. Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's almost Mother's Day, and you can now get anything you need delivered with Uber Eats. Well, almost anything. So no, you can't order a relaxing shower, but some beautiful flowers, you bet we deliver those. A bird bath? No. A bath bomb? Absolutely. It's no to a chocolate lab, but yes to some chocolate truffles. So whether it's a last-minute gift for Mother's Day, fresh groceries, or food from your favorite restaurants, get it delivered today with Uber Eats. Order now. Product availability varies by region. See app for details.
Easy Cater is the smarter, simpler way to order food for your workplace. With easy online ordering, search filters for budget, dietary needs, and more. Save your favorite restaurants and favorite orders for easy reordering. Save time with group ordering. You send a link, your team orders what they want. Plus, Easy Cater makes expense reporting a snap with all your receipts in one place. Easy Cater, more than just a way to order catering for work, it's your business tool for food. Order now at easycater.com.
Something unexpected happened after Jeremy Scott confessed to killing Michelle Schofield in Bone Valley Season 1.
Every time I hear about my dad, it's, oh, he's a killer. He's just straight evil.
I was becoming the bridge between Jeremy Scott and the son he'd never known.
At the end of the day, I'm literally a son of a killer.
Listen to new episodes of Bone Valley Season 2 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's April 2020. A woman announces on Facebook that she has COVID and won't be seeking medical attention.
I didn't want to be talked out of this plan.
Then she disappears.
Anyone else think this is strange?
I just had to know. How did this happen?
Listen to What Happened to Talina Czar on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.